Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Vayera with Rabbi Alex Israel. This week, Rabbi Alex Israel discusses Vayera. Rabbi Alex Israel is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Alex Israel.
Last week's Parshat Shavua, last week's Torah portion, left us in crisis. The Israelites, Bnei Israel, are in slavery in Egypt. And Moses and Aaron, Moshe and Aharon, have come to Pharaoh. And since they started with their political activism, their moves to gain freedom for the Hebrews, for the Israelites, for Bnei Israel, things have just got worse. Pharaoh has stopped giving the people straw, so now they've got no raw materials to make bricks. And Pharaoh is brilliant in his plan to turn the slave workers against their leader, the people against Moshe and Aharon. And when the foreman of the Israelites find Moshe, they say, may the Lord look upon you and punish you for making us loathsome to Pharaoh and his courtiers, putting a sword in their hands to slay us. In other words, the Israelites are furious with Moshe. And Moses returns to God and says, why are you bringing harm upon this people? Why did you ever send me? Ever since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has dealt worse with the people and you have not delivered your people. In other words, we leave last week's Parshat Shavua, last week's portion, on a real downer. Things are in crisis. Moses throws up his hands in desperation. And this week's Parsha Vayera opens once again with a sort of reappointment of Moses. And God promises him that he is going to now appear to the people and redeem them. I'll just read the verses which we're going to discuss. The Lord spoke to Moses saying, go and tell Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, to let the Israelites depart from the land. But Moses appealed to the Lord saying, the Israelites wouldn't even listen to me. How then should Pharaoh heed me, a man of impeded speech? Hein b'nei Yisrael lo shamu elai, ve'echish ma'eni paro va'ani aral svataim. And I would like today in our class to deal with Moshe, Moses' situation of impeded speech, aral svatayim, or if we translate it literally, I'm a man of uncircumcised lips. Now here, when we talk about this issue, there are several problems that we want to deal with. Because already in last week's parsha, at the burning bush, Moses had already complained to God and told him that he wasn't exactly a man of fluent speech. The verses we just read were from chapter 6, but back in chapter 4, Moses said to the Lord, chapter 4, verse 10, please, O Lord, I have never been a man of words, lo ish devarim anochi. Either in the past or now that you have spoken to me, I am slow of speech and slow of tongue. I am kvad peh or kvad lashon, heavy of mouth and heavy of tongue. Interesting this. Heavy of mouth, heavy of tongue, the word kaved, we're soon going to see that Pharaoh's heart is kaved, is heavy. So heaviness is definitely part of the Exodus story. But here's the question, number one, what is the difference between kvad peh and kvad lashon, heaviness of mouth, heaviness of tongue, and the phrase that Moses uses here, aral svatayim, uncircumcised lips? Both seem to relate to a speech difficulty or a speech impediment, but why are different phrases used? Question number two. Last week, God rebuked Moses and says, who gives man speech? Who makes him dumb or deaf, seeing or blind? It is not I, the Lord. Now go and I will be with you as you speak and will instruct you what to say. In other words, God says to him, don't worry. It'll all be okay. I will help you to know what to say. Now, by the way, here, there is an interesting discussion about what was wrong with Moses' speech. The Rashbam, Rashi's grandson, the Rashbam, says that the problem was that somehow he was unfamiliar with the Egyptian dialect. He didn't know the language. I don't know whether it was the language of the Egyptians or the language of the Hebrews, but somehow he felt that he was non-fluent in that language. In which case, God might be saying, don't worry, you know, if you can't always come up with the right words, I will help you with it. Ibn Ezra, another medieval commentator, suggests that Moshe had difficulty enunciating certain phrases or certain sounds, that possibly he had a stammer or a stutter or some sort of speech impediment. And once again, here, what does God say? I'll give you the phrase in the Ibn Ezra. He says, "Shelo haya yochol hotzi otiot hasafa v'chol otiot halashon." There were certain difficult sounds for him. Like, I don't know, sometimes an English speaker finds it difficult to pronounce a sort of Yemenite guttural ayin or the Israeli resh, and we find it difficult to pronounce those phrases. Israelis find a TH a very difficult sound. So different dialects or different people trained in different language can't pronounce. And when God says, I will be with you, Ibn Ezra suggests that possibly he will give him speeches which don't involve him pronouncing or enunciating those sounds which he find difficult. But if this is all true, then why would it be that Moshe, now in our parasha, seems to repeat the same thing? God has already told him, I will help you. And in fact, we might add that when Moses continues to insist, he says, I will send Aaron to help you. Aaron will be your spokesman, and you will speak to me, but Aaron will be your spokesman. Why now does Moshe complain again, I am of uncircumcised lips? What exactly is wrong here? And here I'm going to give a third question, and then we're going to move to some answers. And the third question is that initially we all learn about Moses' difficulty in speaking, his heaviness of mouth, his heaviness of tongue, his uncircumcised lips. But Moses, when we think about him and when we know the Torah, nobody seems to be a greater talker than Moses. The whole book of Devarim, literally, words, was spoken by Moses, a speech which goes on for over 20 chapters. Moses is the speaker, the communicator. He is the one who communicates the entire Torah. How might we say that Moses is not a man of words? Of course he is a man of words. There is nobody who speaks more than Moses. He seems certainly to have overcome his disability. What are we exactly going to make of this whole thing? So I would like to suggest maybe three lines of explanation. The first is very rational and very simple. At the burning bush, when Moses was instructed to talk, God said to him that the people he was meant to talk to were the people of Israel. He says to him go and assemble, chapter 3, verse 16, go and assemble the elders of Israel and say to them, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob has appeared to me. And he gives him the whole message that he's meant to give them. And then Moses says, well, what if they don't believe me and don't listen to me? And they say, the Lord didn't appear to you. And he gives him signs. And that's when he says, I am not a man of words. In other words, Moses' problem is he doesn't want to confront the Jewish people. We might remember that Moses was never an Israelite in the classic sense of the word. He was a prince of Egypt. And it could well be that Moses really feels that he doesn't have the ability, neither the words, maybe not the cultural references, maybe not the joint experience. He simply doesn't feel that he will be successful in communicating to the Israelites. To this, God says, first of all, I will be with your mouth. Don't worry, I will help you. And second of all, why don't you go with Aaron? Aaron will help you. Aaron is an Israelite, and they trust him, and it'll all go well. However, as I indicated in my opening introduction, it doesn't go well at all. When Moses initially comes to Pharaoh, everything goes wrong, and even though the Jews at the start accept him, very soon Pharaoh is incredibly successful in turning the slaves against their leader, in turning the Israelites against Moses, and they come and yell at him and say, you know, things have just got worse, and Moses takes his complaint to God. And now what God does is, he says, you know, I'm going to send you to Pharaoh himself. At which point Moses says, listen, Hain ben Israel lo shemu elai. Even the Israelites didn't listen to me, even with your help. And how is Pharaoh going to listen to me? And I am a man of uncircumcised lips. He feels that he has been unsuccessful in his oratory experience. He feels he's been unsuccessful to communicate a vision, a sense of hope, a sense of the future. And if he hasn't managed to convince the slaves, he's certainly not going to be able to convince the leader. And this explains why Moses is repeating his complaints. Maybe he's using slightly different phrases here. Before he said his speech was heavy, now he says his lips are uncircumcised. According to Rashi, this means I feel my lips are blocked. I feel my language goes nowhere. And if that's true, then what he's really doing is intensifying his original complaint, saying, before I thought I had an impediment, but now I think I'm absolutely helpless and hopeless at doing this. And I think this is probably the best explanation according to Pshat, according to the simple meaning of how to explain this repetition. that Moses, as God, is asking him to do an even harder job of actually confronting a world leader, the despotic ruler, Pharaoh, the slave master himself. Moses feels that there is absolutely no way that his oratory abilities, that his speech, that his powers of persuasion are going to stand him in good stead. And he repeats the complaint to God. Of course, God is going to send him less on a mission of persuasion and more of a mission of miracles, but that's for another time. So that's the first explanation, which explains the repetition. But I'd like to go into some maybe more, some deeper explanations. And I want to focus on this interesting image of Moshe talking about his lips, and maybe talk a little bit about this aral spatayim, the uncircumcised lips. Of course, what does this mean? Nobody circumcises lips. It's interesting that there are other parts of the body, of course, which can be circumcised. And one of them, of course, we know circumcision is in Brit Milah, but I'd like to relate to another part of the body, which is that when God talks about the fact that Israel will repent, he talks about Umaltem et Orlat Levavachem. I will circumcise the foreskin of your hearts. I will circumcise your hearts. In other words, the notion of Orlah, uncircumcised, seems to be a state of coarse, raw, maybe something extraneous, maybe something covering. And when I circumcise your heart becomes pure. Your heart becomes refined. Your heart becomes true and able to really communicate. In that case, the circumcision of the lips, on the one hand, indicates the removal of an impediment, but on the other hand, it resonates with a sense of purification. In this understanding, Moses is not saying, I can't speak. Of course, God has solved his speech impediment. God already told him, I will be with your mouth. But he's saying, I don't feel like I'm pure enough to go on this mission. Now, where am I getting this strange idea from? Well, I'm getting it from the idea of Orlat Levavachem, or Maltemet Orlat Levavachem, I will circumcise the foreskin of your hearts, parallel to I will circumcise your lips. Of course, neither the heart or the mouth are things which are cut or which surgery is performed upon them, and therefore both of these must be metaphors. But this metaphor is articulated in a very, very beautiful midrash. It's a midrash I learned as a child, and some of you may have heard it too. And the midrash goes like this: Moses is raised as Pharaoh's stepson. As Pharaoh's surrogate grandson, I should say. It's Pharaoh's daughter who raises Moses. And the story goes like this. Moses would sit on Pharaoh's lap. And what would he do? He's a little baby. He plays around with Pharaoh's crown. He takes the crown off Pharaoh's head and puts it on his own head. And all of the Khartoumim, the magicians of Egypt, say, oh boy, this child is going to be trouble. Look, he wants to actually remove your crown, O Pharaoh. And this child is a pretender to the throne. He's not even your biological grandson, and you should be very wary of this child. In fact, the Midrash here, which is from Shemot Rabbah, says some suggested to execute him, some suggested to burn him. And it says there was one particular advisor in the Midrash, it is Jethro, and says, listen, let's do a little test. Let's put in front of him the crown, and let's put in front of him a coal, the glowing coal. And if he reaches for the crown, we'll know that he's really seeking to take the leadership. And then we will kill him. But if he goes for the coal, then we'll know he's an idiot, because he's stupid. And of course, he won't be able to take over the kingdom. And then we won't kill him. According to the Midrash, again, what do you imagine a child would do? They'd see a shiny, bejeweled crown. Or if they saw a black coal, I imagine most children would reach for the crown. And indeed, this is what Moses does. And at the last moment, he was about to take the crown, and the angel Gabriel comes and pushes Moses' hands, and he takes the coal, which was a hot coal, it was a glowing coal, and he put it in his mouth. And that is how he got his speech impediment. Because somehow as a child, he put a hot coal in his mouth, and it somehow affected his lips. It disfigured his lips or his tongue, and in that way he is kavad peh or kavad lashon. He is heavy of mouth. He is heavy of tongue, and this is how he got his speech difficulty. Fascinating. What a strange midrash. Where does the midrash draw its imagery from? And the answer is that if you open Isaiah chapter 6, in a very, very beautiful, this is also a Haftarah, we see Isaiah's initial prophecy in which he sees God himself. He says, I beheld my Lord seated on high in a lofty throne, and his skirts of his robe filled the temple. Seraphim stood in attendance of him. Each had six wings. With two they covered their faces, with two they covered their legs, and they would fly and they would call to each other and say, Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvaot, holy, 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 the Lord of hosts. His presence fills the entire earth. In other words, Isaiah goes to the temple and sees God and all the angels. And suddenly, as he sees all this, he says, woe is me, I am lost, for I am a man of unclean lips. This is Isaiah. I am of unclean lips, ish tmeis vatayim anochi, and I live amongst the people of unclean lips. Yet my eyes have beheld the King of the Lord of hosts. In other words, how can I see God? I live in an impure generation, and I am an impure man. At which point, one of the angels flies over to him with a coal, and the coal he has taken from the altar, and he touches it to his lips and says, now that this has touched your lips, your guilt shall depart and your sin be purged away. And then I heard a voice of the Lord saying, who shall I send? Who will go for us? And I said, here I am, hineni, here I am, shalcheni, why don't you send me? And at this point, he is sent, Isaiah is sent on his divine mission. This is, of course, a prophetic image. It didn't obviously happen in real life. But what is being, of course, sometimes fire is a purging fire, a cleansing fire. And what is, this is Isaiah's initial prophecy. And I would suggest that the Midrash is transposing this image to the persona of Moshe Rabbeinu, to the persona of Moses. Of course, Moses, who's grown up in Egypt, Moses, who's been raised in the palace of Pharaoh. Why is he to be chosen? Who is he? He says, I am of uncircumcised lips. And if we can go with our explanation, this indicates a sense of impurity, something which needs refinement, something which needs to be elevated, something which needs to be purified. This is indeed the image that we get from Isaiah. Isaiah says, I am a man of impure lips. And God takes a coal, touches it to his lips, and that way purifies his sin in a figurative sense, allowing him to be the leader. This explains the Midrashic impetus to imagine that Moses somehow has done a similar thing with a coal, an angel moving his hand and actually giving him a coal, which he then, as a child would do, put in his mouth. But what's really saying here? Moses is saying, according to this, last week's Parashat Shavua at the burning bush, he said to God, I can't speak. And God says, fine, I'll help you to know how to speak. But what he's saying here is, Hein ani aral svataim, I have impure lips. I am unworthy. I am not worthy of being a prophet. I am not on a high enough spiritual level. And at this point, God says, well, actually, you are. You are on a high enough spiritual level. You can do it. And in fact, the way the parasha continues is it then launches into a genealogy and explains exactly how Moshe is descended from Jacob and descended from Levi and descended from Kahat and Amram. He has the highest pedigree, the top genealogy. Nothing to worry about. Moses, indeed, a fully fledged Israelite. He is not an Egyptian. He is not a pagan. He is somebody who comes from all the way from the patriarchs. And indeed, he can bear the divine message. He can be the instrument for divine power. So according to this, what we're actually experiencing, this is a metaphorical reading, a figurative reading, we're actually reading this as a drama of Moses' spiritual insecurity and God's reassurance of him, that indeed he is sending him. And as the verses, and if you read through chapter 6, you'll see how it goes through his family lineage. God is reassuring him that he is as pure as any other Israelite and that he can indeed be God's prophet. However, I would like to now enter into a third dimension, which is not merely about Moses' speech. That was our first explanation, Moses' personal purity, but is about something much wider. And here I would like to see this theme of aral svatayim as a metaphor of uncircumcised lips, as a metaphor for the Jewish people as a whole. And this approach I have got from the writings of Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik, the Rav, in his wonderful article, which you can actually find online, Redemption Prayer and Talmud Torah. This was originally printed in the journal Tradition in 1978. And Rabbi Soloveitchik quotes a passage from the Zohar. I'll read some of it to you. Zohar from Parshat Vayera. And I quote, "And Moses spoke before the Lord, saying, Behold, the children of Israel have not hearkened to me. And how shall Pharaoh hear me, who seeing that I am of uncircumcised lips? How did Moses dare say this, says the Zohar? Had not the Holy One already promised him when he said that he was not eloquent, that he will be with his mouth? Or did the Holy One not keep his promise? However, says the Zohar, there is here an inner meaning. Moses was in the grade of voice, and the grade of utterance was then in exile." If I read from the Hebrew or the Aramaic, Moses only had a call, but he did not yet have the stage of dibor, speech, utterance. Hence he said, "How shall Pharaoh hear me, seeing that my utterance is in exile to him, is in bondage to him? I only have voice, and I lack utterance. Therefore God joined him with Aaron, who was an utterance without a voice. And when Moses came, the voice appeared, but it was a voice without speech. This lasted until Israel approached Mount Sinai to receive the Torah. Then the voice and the utterance were united, and the word was spoken, as it says, and the Lord spoke all these words." What is being said here? The Zohar is suggesting that there are various levels of speech. In fact, there are, if you want, three different levels, right? There is voice, and there is utterance, and there is speech. Voice is merely maybe some sort of sound. Utterance is actually saying something, and speech is real communication. What is being expressed here? Rabbi Soloveitchik suggests that this is really a metaphor for the whole notion of slavery and freedom. To be free means to be able to speak. To be free means to be able to tell your own story. Maybe let me stress that we use this strange word of aral spatayim, uncircumcised lips. But of course, what we have, what we call circumcision in Jewish circles, is the Brit Milah, the covenant of circumcision. But the word Milah doesn't mean only circumcising, but it means word. Milah means a word in Hebrew. And Rabbi Soloveitchik suggests that when you are free, you are able to tell your story. You are able to articulate. You are able to express yourself. You are able to tell your own story. A slave is unable to tell this story because a slave is subservient. He has no personal biography. He doesn't have a story to tell. And this is maybe why we spend the night in which we engage in our freedom. The night of the Seder, the night of Pesach, we talk about Haggadah, telling. Tell your children, because to be able to tell your own story means you have an identity. And I will read Rabbi Soloveitchik's passage here from Redemption Prayer and Talmud Torah. "The animal is exposed to pain, so is the slave. When the slave meets with pain, he reacts like an animal, uttering a sharp, shrill sound. However, the howl of the beast, like the shriek of the slave, lasts a moment in the darkness and hush of night. In a split second, all is silent again. There's no aftermath to the pain sensation of the animal or the slave. There follows no complaint, no request, no protest, no question of why and what. The slave does not know suffering, lacking, as he does, the very existential need awareness which generates suffering. He is never in distress because he has no human needs. The needs of a slave are, like his shriek, not human. The etiology of his needs is exclusively biological. The absence of suffering mitigates the sharpness of pain." And here Rav Soloveitchik continues and says, "Former inmates of concentration camps have told me that they had, with the passage of time, become inured to any pain or torture, as if they had totally been anesthetized. They were dumb beings. They not only stopped speaking, but ceased to emit coherent sounds as well." Rabbi Soloveitchik is relating to the fact that slaves are silent. Indeed, chapter 1 of Exodus has the Jewish people in bondage, but they say nothing. If you remember the scene where Moses sees the Egyptian beating the Jew, nobody speaks out, nobody says anything. Moses looks this way and that, and there was no man. And according to some explanations, there was no man. He was waiting for an Israelite to protest, to speak up, but they didn't. They'd become so used to slavery, they couldn't speak. When they were hit, they screamed, but they couldn't articulate. And in fact, the first moment when Israel wake up, what do? They vayanchu, they groan, they moan. They can't yet talk. By the way, even this groan or this moan, this anacha, this sighing, is a sign of humanity. They're actually beginning to utter a sound, in the words of the Zohar, a call. But they are not yet at the level of dibor. They have, if you want, an ability to utter a sound, a groan, a moan. Okay, now we'll read you the verses. It says, at the end of chapter 2, a long time after that, the king of Egypt died. The Israelites were groaning under the bondage and cried out. And they cry for help from the bondage, rose up to God. They cry, they moan, but they do not articulate. This is what it means. Uncircumcised lips, they can't articulate. The text divides, and now I will quote again from Soloveitchik. The text divides the process of redemption in three stages. First, it identifies bondage with the absence of both word and meaningful sound, with total silence. Then the redemption begins with finding sound while the word is still absent. Finally, with the finding of both sound and word, redemption attains its full realization. Before Moses came, there was not even a single sound. No complaint was lodged, no sigh, no cry uttered. Only an agonizing, unhuman shriek would penetrate the weird silence of the night. The slaves were gloomy, voiceless, and mute. The women did not cry when their infants were snatched from their arms. The men kept quiet when they were mercilessly tortured by their slave drivers. When Moses came, the sound or the voice came into being. Moses, by defending the helpless Jew, restored sensitivity to the dull slaves. Suddenly they realized that all pain, anguish, and humiliation and cruelty, all the greed and intolerance of man, is evil. This realization brought in its wake not only sharp pain, but a sense of suffering as well. With suffering came protest, the cry, the question, the wordless demand for justice and retribution. And of course, the voice of human existence was now heard. And we will take it even further. Where do we have dibor? Where do we suddenly have speech? That already appears when we start developing our national essence. At Mount Sinai, when we get the Torah, suddenly we hear devarim, we hear words, we articulate what the inner essence of the Jewish people is. So how will I answer my question? Why does Moses use this strange phrase, I am uncircumcised of lips, because we are seeing an evolution of language. If we want, and maybe I won't be so rigid with Rabbi Soloveitchik's explanation, but if you want, chapter 1 and 2 of Shemot, of Exodus, the people are absolutely silent. Then they start to cry and to groan. Then Moses' word comes out and Moses starts talking, even though he is heavy of speech and heavy of tongue. However, he can talk, but it is still not refined. And he says, I am aral spatayim, I am circumcised of lips. I don't know what to say. I haven't yet developed my own identity. And at a certain point, as the Jewish people start developing, as they start discovering who they are, as they start developing their own identity, their speech is circumcised, their speech is purified, they discover their own particular Jewish identity. They have a Brit Milah, they have a covenant of language, a covenant of word, and now the word emerges. They start finding their own Jewish words. They start developing Torah. They start understanding their own particular identity, and this is the beginning of the creation of the Jewish people. And maybe what we've done is we've tried to articulate ourselves in how many ways we can understand this idea of aral sfatayim. In our first reading, simply Moses' political struggles with how he is going to be the leader of the Jewish people and approach Pharaoh. In our second reading, it is a spiritual metaphor for Moses. Is he really a Jew? Is he really part of the Jewish people? Is he really worthy of carrying the divine mission? But on our third level, this is actually a metaphor for the entire Jewish people, from their emancipation from a slave nation which has no independent story, no independent identity, to a people who can bear their own message, who can carry the message of God into history, who can contribute their own verse to the unfolding drama of humanity and civilization. Thank you very much. Wishing you all a Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Israel. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.